Hello and welcome to At the Letters for Saturday, March 8th. I am on field two of the Blue Jays spring training complex as we speak right now. We are going to be hearing very shortly from Arden Zwelling. He is somewhere at the player development complex right now as we speak. We caught up yesterday, which is the bulk here in this episode, but I am just teeing things up right here. As it happens at spring training, we have a lot of different places to go. It's oddly kind of harder to get on the same page schedule-wise because Arden is preparing for broadcasts, doing all kinds of prep there. I am, you know, writing various things. We have different interviews. So we were able to connect yesterday and cover a lot of ground. But right now, I'm doing the intro solo, and you might be able to hear some birds in the background, some players working out, whatever the case. There is a lot going on here at spring training, and we thank you for joining us here on At the Letters. Of course, we also want to thank Shawali, who has shown us so much patience here when it comes to getting this episode off the ground this week. So thanks to Christian, Ryan, of course, thanks to Nick Andrade, but especially thanks to Shawali this week. Baseball-wise, going to just touch on a couple things real quick off of the top of the show here. We'll also hear some of Arden's comments that we were able to record yesterday before we get to our conversation about the goings-on at Blue Jays camp. But I did just want to touch on the Vlad Guerrero Jr. interview that he did in Spanish with a couple of reporters from ESPN, in which he said that his ask of the Blue Jays did not reach $600 million. So interesting, because everything to do with Vlad Guerrero Jr. is pretty interesting at this point in time. Not shocking. I mean, I have never seen it reported that he was looking for $600 million. So by that stretch, it is not a shock, but still interesting. And Arden and I did sort of both agree that, look, this is not a major distraction for the team. It's probably a small scale distraction, just in the sense that, you know, players will notice it, they'll see it on social media, and then they'll move on. But players deal with so many of these little distractions in the course of the season. Pretty normal, pretty standard issue. They're fully capable of doing that. This is not Reese McGuire getting caught in a parking lot. This is not a global pandemic. It's one of the small scale sort of distractions. And being here at Jays camp, there is, you know, it's just not what people are focused on. So maybe, you know, from a fan standpoint, of course, it's a big deal. Players here, they are not worried about it. So, you know, that being said, we still don't know exactly what it was. Now, Vlad Jr. saying it wasn't 600, it's obviously over 340, which is the offer he rejected. So that still leaves a huge range. I made the case in February that a deal in the range of $500 million could have been a win-win for the Blue Jays and for Vlad Jr. I still believe that. I've heard and sought out different opinions in the industry in this time with the Blue Jays, people within this organization, and people who have nothing to do with the Toronto Blue Jays. And I understand that it is, of course, the job of executives to make recommendations that are driven by data and not by gut feel. Of course, acknowledge that. I still believe, when you look at just how good Vlad Jr. is, how young he is, how rare that combination is, that there actually could have been win-win deals at 500, maybe even a little above that. But of course, the closer you get to 600 million, then the harder that becomes. Not to say that there couldn't have been pathways earlier for the Blue Jays to get something done. But if we're discussing the events of February 2025, you know, is there a point at which an organization, a team has to say, the opportunity cost is too great here. We could use that money better by potentially spreading it, potentially waiting, potentially doing some different things. I can understand that line of thinking. Again, I think that, you know, everyone who's listened to this podcast knows that I think that there could have been some win-win deals there, even at a very high price, because I think Vlad Jr. is a great player. I really do. I think when you look at the numbers, how rare it is for players to accomplish what he has by the age of 25, it is a pretty special combination. So those are some real quick thoughts on the Vlad Jr. situation. You will now hear some further thoughts from Arden that we were able to capture yesterday on the Vlad Jr. situation. You'll hear some observations from Blue Jays camp with more to come. Certainly excited to pick up this conversation in the next couple of weeks. Arden, I think, is here for for the long haul at this point. I've been here for a couple weeks and will be here for a little bit longer before going back to Toronto, but still so much to discuss here. And really excited to set up the season. And look, I mean, it's not the kind of heights that of optimism that probably a lot of folks would have hoped for and envisioned at this point in time, but this is still going to be a pretty interesting year. So I'm fascinated to see what's ahead, and very happy that you've joined us and decided to listen. So, and just one other quick thank you to all of the At the Letters listeners here at Spring Training who have made a point of coming over to say hello to myself, to Arden. We definitely appreciate it, and are glad that everyone's listening and enjoying and getting ready for another season. So thank you. And with that, we will move on to some thoughts from Arden on At the Letters.
My thoughts have not changed. Like, when we had that conversation, we were working around the presumption that the Ortiz number, which was 585 over 14, was at least in the ballpark, you know, somewhere in the sort of mid 500. And so therefore my opinion is unchanged. Like, if you're the Blue Jays and that's the ask, you let him go to market and prove that he can get that. Because to me, in my opinion, there is zero evidence that the market will bear that for a player of his profile. My bias is that I'm a very rational person, and I think it's fair to criticize me for being overly rational and being a little bit too, or just like 100% head and 0% heart. And I think there is room for emotion in this and room for heart in this. And if you're a fan and you just want him to be signed and you don't really care what the number is, like, that's totally fair. What do you care? It's not your money. If I'm looking at this and putting myself in the shoes of somebody who had to walk into a boardroom of my superiors and make a recommendation, I just don't think that I could justify recommending paying this particular player a mid $500 million value. Like, I just couldn't get there logically. Like, stripping away emotion from it and just objectively looking at it using reason, I just can't get there based on the lack of precedent, lack of relevant comparables. And we're always dealing in unknowns in these conversations, and the unknown is what's Vlad's market going to be in 9 months, and that's going to depend largely on what does he do over the next 6 months in terms of health and productivity, and then where are teams positioned in 7 to 8 months when free agency opens, and what type of budgetary flexibility are they working with, and how motivated are they to add a first baseman, where their rosters look like, what are their future payrolls look like, etc. And like, we can't say with any certainty right now what any of that is going to be. So we're always just, you know, if all this was known, we wouldn't be having the discussion. It's all unknowns. And I could be wrong. That, like, that market could be there for Vlad in free agency. I hope it is. Like, I hope he gets $600 million, dude. Like, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope there's a massive bidding war and he gets like the GDP of a small country. Like, that would be great. It'd be so interesting and fascinating to talk and write about that. I just think that with what we know now, empirically, there is little reason to believe that Vlad is going to be able to like recreate the Juan Soto market and the Juan Soto circumstances. And that market, that deal, that number, 765, like, that has such a significant anchoring effect here, because it really did like shift people's perspectives of what is possible and what is reasonable and what can happen. Like, pre-Soto, in the middle of last season, if you had suggested that like Vlad could get mid-500s, it would be farcical. Right, but the Soto deal has really just shifted the goalposts and had this anchoring effect. But as we've been over, in my opinion, I think the Soto deal is just a unicorn. I don't think it's a relevant comparable. Soto's a better player. He has been a better player. He projects to be a better player. And he had this like perfect storm market with the richest owners in baseball, Steve Cohen, Hal Steinbrenner, Edward Rogers, John Henry, all bidding on him. And he had two owners in particular, Cohen and Steinbrenner, who were motivated to behave irrationally out of emotion and out of ego rather than fiscal discipline. I think that 30 MLB GMs, David Stearns included, would tell you that the Soto deal is a fiscally irresponsible deal. Like, it's an emotional deal. It's an ego-driven deal. And I just think that, the, you know, if I'm really looking at this objectively, I just don't see the evidence to warrant the Blue Jays going to a mid $500 million present day valuation without deferrals right now, without him going to market and proving that that's out there for him.
So do you think the Jays play this well?
Yes. If the ask was mid 500s, I would not have gone there. And clearly the Blue Jays front office and ownership wouldn't go there either. I can't justify that, you know, that he's going to beat the prior record for a first base AAV by like well over $10 million. That would be, if he gets mid 500s, that's the second largest deal in baseball history. And look, if we're talking deferrals, he can artificially inflate this number all that he wants. Whatever number he needs to, like, for whatever reason he needs that number, let's do it. Let's work in deferrals and let's, like, move this sticker price all over the place and let's do what they did with Ohtani. But in terms of present day money, mid $500 million is not somewhere I would have gone to. We should dive a bit further into what's going on with the team, because this is a Blue Jays podcast and not a Vlad Jr. podcast, and we just did 2.5 episodes on Vlad Jr. So in the second half, no Vladdy talk whatsoever, only Blue Jays talk when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producer is Shoali. Thanks so much to him for his work on this episode. Christian Ryan will be back next week. Ben, what have you kind of taken away from the spring training games, the Grapefruit League games that we've seen so far? We know not to pay any attention to the results. We know that all kinds of crazy things happen in these games that wouldn't happen during the regular season. But is there anything you've seen that you feel like is meaningful?
Only bad things can happen in spring training games. And I mean, that's a slight exaggeration, because we saw Arjun Namala homer, and we've seen Alan Rodon and Stuart Baroa and Alejandro Kirk, you know, have really good performances, and all those things are good. But mainly, you know, you don't want to see Grayson Rodriguez dealing with a triceps issue. You don't want to see Gunnar Henderson dealing with a side issue. That is the worst case scenario, of course, is to have your star players dealing with injuries. Luis Gil out for 3 months. The Blue Jays, knock on wood if you're a Blue Jays fan right now, are relatively healthy. So that is the main thing. But it's really fun to see some of the young players, to set eyes on an Arjun Namala in a game setting, to watch Alan Rodon, to talk to these guys about what it is that they're trying to work on, how it is that they're trying to prepare. It's super, super fascinating, and it really is the one time of year that you have everyone in the organization in one place, including the minor league players, including all the coaches, the front office. So, you know, it's been really cool to see some of these players. Obviously, we all know the Jays don't have a top-ranked farm system, but that doesn't mean that the individual people who are trying to make their way through these ranks and make a name for themselves don't have some incredible stories, and it's fun to watch them, I find.
No, it's super fun watching the kids, because we don't get to be in Buffalo all the time, or New Hampshire, or Dunedin for that matter. So it's great to, like, watch these guys up close and just kind of see their games with your own two eyes. And I have, like, such a privileged position from the camera well beside the dugout. So I, like, really get to see a lot of the nuances of the game up close. And I get to see that, you know, Alan Rodon is, like, a much more intense competitor than I ever realized. Like, that guy is out there scratching and clawing for absolutely everything. Like, he brings an intensity to the game that I didn't appreciate. I get to see, like, just how good Josh Kasovich is at shortstop. Like, he's looked really, really smooth. I get to look, you know, to see that Arjun Namala is noticeably bigger this year, which, you know, he's still a teenager, so I suppose you can make rather substantial physical gains when you are that age. But, like, he is noticeably bigger, and he is, like, very composed and very calm. Lazaro Estrada is another guy who I've been, like, super, super impressed with on the mound, just in terms of, like, his composure and his mettle, and then seeing his fastball up close and seeing just, like, the late life on that pitch, and the you know, the amount of ride and run that he gets, the way that it gets on hitters, and then he snaps off this crazy high spin curveball. These are things that, you know, you can read about, and you can we can watch the box scores throughout the year, but to actually get to watch it before your eyes is, I think, is helpful And maybe it's just like a novelty thing, right? Because you and I have watched how many hundreds and hundreds of games of George Springer and Dalton Varsho and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Alejandro Kirk. So, something new helps as well. The novelty is nice. But I always really enjoy spring for that reason.
Yeah, someone made the prediction, and I won't say who exactly, but someone said that Lázaro Estrada is the exact kind of pitcher that could be traded at the trade deadline for more pitching. And I have to say that I do agree with that prediction. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But, just on Arjun Namala, because he is one of the top prospects in this organization, you and I were there. It was just you and me in Bradenton down the left field line a couple days ago, talking to him after he hit his first spring training home run. And you used the word composed earlier, and I just wanted to touch on that because it really is striking. A 19-year-old, it kind of reminds me of Bo Bichette when you think about how composed and under control Bo Bichette was coming up as a minor leaguer and as a prospect, and how he always had kind of a real comfort with himself and with his surroundings. I sense some of that same comfort and ease with Arjun Namala, who's, out there talking like a pro at 19 years old. Like, he's saying, the organization does these things well. It's like, this is a very, mature individual for his age in some ways. So really interesting to see that and watch some of these guys as they try to take those next steps forward.
Yeah, it's big league energy is what it is. And I got that from Bo when I was talking to him as a teenager in Bluefield and in Dunedin and in New Hampshire. So he was rising through the Blue Jays system, and I absolutely get that from Arjun Namala as well. That's where we're really privileged to get to actually like talk to these guys and get to know them, because it's something that I've kind of gotten better at in my time in baseball, is sort of realizing who has the game, the industry, the feel, the routines, the life figured out at an earlier age than others. And I think that Arjun's absolutely one of those guys. And look, he homers off Johan Ramirez.
Namala, minor leaguer, bats for the first time. Ooh, that'll make you mad if you're pitching. Yeah. That's a no-doubter.
Wow. Off the back net back there, protecting the cars.
Yowza.
Johan Ramirez is no joke. Like, that is a veteran big league reliever. He's got like 140 big league games. He's finished 59 big league games. This is a guy who's been with the Dodgers, who don't really bring in poor pitchers. This is a guy who's been with the Guardians, who again are an organization that's always looking for quality arms. And he was working like 96, 97 with a two-seamer that had a bunch of sink on it, and he was throwing three other pitches in the zone for strikes, and he was challenging these young Blue Jays hitters. And talking to Arjun, he had that sort of right-handed two-seamer running in on him, and he saw it earlier in the plate appearance in a pretty similar spot to the one that he hit out. And he told us he registered the movement, and he understood like how he had to swing, like how that ball could run right into his barrel if he executed the right swing on it. And then when he saw that pitch again, lo and behold, he hooked that ball way out of the ballpark, windy day or not. Like, that is a homer anywhere that he hits it. And to me, like, that's the advanced approach. That's the process that the Blue Jays are looking for from young players. Like, homers are great. Like, results are great. Of course, that's what gets you to the big leagues. But your approach, your plan at the plate, your process, that's what keeps you in the big leagues. And the fact that Arjun Namala had a very advanced approach in that moment, I think, is something that the Blue Jays would be really pleased with at this stage in his development.
He has loud tools. You don't get drafted in the first round unless you have real tools, like an arm, like a swing that can generate real exit velocity. But to an extent, that only gets you so far. And to me, he seems like a guy who can likely get more out of those tools than a lot of players would, which is a really good thing. And along those lines, like having the chance to, I was at an event hosted by Scott Belford the other night in Dunedin, Florida, where Alan Roden, Riley Tirada, and Chad Dallas were speaking on a player panel. And it was really interesting, actually, hearing Riley Tirada and Alan Roden talking about their preparation as hitters and as position players. These are guys who are AAA in the Blue Jays organization. And, man, they are like dialed in. They have given so much thought to their preparation. They can really articulate what it is that they're trying to do, and mentally how they kind of stay focused and walk the line between, you know, aspiring to the major leagues and staying present where they are in Buffalo. It was honestly pretty impressive to hear these guys talking about that. And Arjun Namala, you know, 4 or 5 years younger than those guys. So a different stage in his development, certainly not going to see him in the major leagues anytime soon. But yeah, this is really important stuff. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you can't get a hit off of, you know, Zach Eflin or whoever's on the mound on a given day, you still have to be able to deliver. But some of these soft skills, I mean, it's spring training is a time that there's a lot of development for these minor league players, because they are around major leaguers. They get to observe them. They get to pick their brains and train alongside them in an environment that's very different than Buffalo or New Hampshire in April, when it's just you and a few coaches and your teammates.
Yeah, and to that point, I think that the Blue Jays were really happy with the way that Namala last year, when he was struggling at the beginning of the year, didn't allow those struggles to bleed over to his defense. Like his ability to separate offense from defense at that age and really compartmentalize those things is something I've heard from a few people now that was really impressive. And then obviously he went back to, he went on the development list, went back to Dunedin to work on some things, and they fixed some postural issues and some movement pattern stuff that was getting in the way, and then he returns to affiliated ball and had that like amazing run to finish his year. It's just an advanced, mature approach and mindset, and that's why you see him in big league games right now. Like you don't see any other 19-year-olds in big league games for the Blue Jays. Like I don't think there's a lot of 19-year-olds they would bring over for these games, but they trust them all, and they feel like he can thrive in that environment. And he's proven them right. Roden is another guy whose, you know, mental skills are elite. You wrote about him and the obvious intelligence that he has, and that he got at Creighton, where he was studying some pretty complex stuff. And he's somebody who, you know, that you talk to him and that's very obvious. And you hear about some of the work that he's done at Driveline in recent years and some of the ways that he thinks about his swing and about his movements at the plate. You think about some of the ways that he's added power and found a way to tap more into his physical tools. He increased his peak exit velocity last year by 5 miles per hour, which is not easy to do. Like this is a guy who has really gotten the most out of himself. Like I don't know if he's ever going to be a 3-4 win player in the big leagues, but I can tell you that he will reach his upside. And like if he doesn't succeed in the big leagues, it's not for a lack of effort or intelligence or ingenuity. And if there is one young player in this camp who I would give like a dark horse shot at cracking the opening day roster, it would be Alan Roden. I think it's probably a long shot, but I think that he is the one guy from like the prospect group, from the group of Blue Jay players who have yet to debut in the big leagues, who actually has a realistic shot at getting themselves onto the opening day 26.
Uh-oh. That ball's hit well out to right field. That's another one that was sort of off the plate somewhat, wasn't it? Second solo home run of the day for the Blue Jays. It's now a 5-2 game.
No, another no-doubter.
Well, again, he had 16 home runs last year in the minor leagues.
That's a strong man.
I think we'll see him in the majors at some point this year. I think it's kind of, you know, more likely, and it sounds like you agree with this, but it seems like it's more likely that that would happen midseason. But sure, you know, could it happen earlier? Wouldn't shock me. I think that his preparation, talking to him, seems to be really, really good. For anyone who hasn't checked out the article, Alan Roden was studying astrophysics and was intending to go on to graduate school studying astrophysics, studying quasars, which are the centers of mass at this center of galaxies. I don't have it in front of me. It's beyond my comprehension. Clearly not beyond Alan Roden. So this is where he was going with himself. And he's a really good baseball player. So, but you know, he's also got some good feel, you know, it seems, for understanding the mental side of things. Like, of course, he's got an aptitude for numbers, But this isn't someone who's just nerding out. There's a feel aspect of the game too. And this is something that all these guys have to balance, because, you know, you can look at your stuff leaving your hand. You can look at the RPMs on your slider. But end of the day, you have to throw the pitch that you believe in. You have to throw the pitch that the opposing hitter isn't expecting. So it's just this, you know, this combination of soft skills and of course, the data and the analytics. And this is a chance for these guys to see how the best in the game do it. So really super fascinating. And I think that, you know, broadly, when I look at where this organization is, I mean, of course, there are huge overarching questions about Mark Shapiro, about Ross Atkins, about John Schneider, about Vlad Jr. But I guess when I look at 2025 and the roster for 2025, I think that they have actually enough depth on the position player side with guys like Class A or Loperfido or Roden, who are coming up, who are pretty close to being ready to contribute. I think on the pitching side, there are way more questions there because, as we have talked about many times, they have not drafted and developed pitching well enough. That is their biggest deficiency as an organization. But I will say, getting Ryan Yarbrough on a minor league deal, that is a really nice stopgap at a really affordable price. So I think that, you know, they can, at this moment, I think they can patchwork things. Of course, one injury would change that and put a ton of pressure on things.
Roden and Kasevich have a really interesting thing going. They are pushing each other. And they're both like very cerebral guys. They're both like, anybody will tell you they're the hardest workers in the minor leagues. Like, we see it every day in the Blue Jays clubhouse in the spring. Like, every time you see one of those guys, like, one's drenched in sweat, the other's like carrying his bat off to the cages, the other's going out for extra work, and, you know, the other guy is talking to a coach about something, and you even, like, you talk to coaches and developers who are working with these guys, and they talk about how cerebral these dudes are and like how engaged they are, you know, that they ask really insightful questions, just how bought in they are to the process, you know. I think that, you know, the Blue Jays talk a lot about developing a culture and sort of elevating high standards, and you can take it or leave it with that, but I think that those two guys are going to be drivers of that for a very long time. And just as far as like examples of what the Blue Jays value and what they're looking for in young players, like, I think those two guys are it in strides, and it shows up in the like gains that they've made in terms of players and on the field impact. I think they're both going to be big leaguers at some point this year, and I think the Blue Jays believe they both can be big leaguers for some time. It gets back to something that I've been thinking about a little bit lately, because, you know, as you just alluded to, like, we come on here and we kind of bang on about the drafting and development for the Blue Jays, and, you know, how that has sort of been the Achilles heel of the last couple seasons. Like, it's the biggest indictment of the front office that you can make, I think, of this era of Blue Jays baseball. Like, it's why they haven't had the success that they envisioned that they would, because they haven't had that upward pressure on the roster. They haven't had the backfill for injuries and underperformance when they've needed it. But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm sort of coming down on the side that it's a bit more of a drafting issue than a development issue, because you continually see these players coming out of the system, whether it's Spencer Horowitz, David Schneider, Roden, Kasevich, you could throw Stuart Baroa in this bucket, as players who have reached the big leagues and who have reached like a pretty close approximation of their upside. Players who I think in other organizations probably don't get to the big leagues. And their upsides are limited. Like, we're not talking about guys who are going to be 4 or 5 win players in the big leagues, but the fact that some of these guys are coming out of the Blue Jays system and being 1 win players or 2 win players, that to me is an example of good development. Development can only work with the raw materials and the upside that is given. In drafting, you are identifying upside, you're identifying talent, you're identifying players that could be 3-4 win players someday. Like, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that upside. And I think that the development system has actually done a really good job on the position player side with the talent and upside potential, like the genetic ceilings that they have been given. And I just think that there's like a lot of examples to point to for that. Even Ernie Clement being one who wasn't drafted by the Blue Jays, but who last year was like, I don't know, a 2-win player or something. And Cleveland couldn't get that out of him, and Oakland couldn't get that out of him. And those are franchises with much stricter payroll limitations that build their rosters on players who they can just renew at the league minimum and get immense surplus value out of. You don't think that like Oakland and Cleveland would have liked to have like 150 games at third base of Vernie Clement over the last couple of years, given them two wins, but they weren't able to produce that. The Blue Jays were. They were able to develop him into, you know, touching his upside. So I do think that the Blue Jays' issue over the last several years has been much more drafting than development.
I think those are some very interesting points, and they're definitely two different parts of the whole, you know, front office job here. I agree that they have developed position players in a lot of cases and gotten the most out of what has been drafted. I don't see the same on the pitching side. So I'm not seeing a lot of developmental success stories for the Blue Jays on the pitching side. So that's a contributor to where they are as an organization.
Any other storylines at camp that are sticking out to you, then?
You know, for me, one of the reasons I was excited to, you know, come down here, cover spring training, and get a sense of where this team was at was Max Scherzer.
Swing and a miss, strike three. Max Scherzer strands the leadoff double, strikes out a sixth batter in three scoreless innings.
First of all, he's healthy. Second of all, he's got some interesting thoughts on things such as ABS and such as how he prepares for the season and what it means to ramp up and what it means to have conversations with his fellow pitchers behind the scenes, what he's trying to offer them. But really, as we're trying to make sense of this team's chances of competing, the mere fact that he is healthy and looking good and throwing up to, I mean, what's he maxing out at now? 94, 93, 94, something like that. So that's kind of where you'd want him to be. It's not quite Kevin Gausman levels where Gausman's like looking really good, sitting 95, 96. I mean, that's great, but you wouldn't expect Max Scherzer to be sitting at that range. So if Max Scherzer's at 92, 93, that's fine. He can pitch there. He can be healthy. He says that the nerve issue that ran from his thumb through his triceps last year has really subsided. He's been able to help rehab that and get himself in a better physical place. So that is massive for the Blue Jays. I mean, the health, when you're talking about a 40-year-old pitcher, is always going to be a question. And to this point, that question seems to be trending in a good direction for the Blue Jays, and that's going to help them every 5 days.
Yeah, super meticulous dude, comes exactly as advertised. He has like mapped out for the entirety of spring the exact days that he wants to throw his bullpens on, the exact amount of pitches he wants to throw in his bullpens, the exact days he wants to do pitchers fielding practice. He has specific sequences that he is going to either throw or not throw to specific hitters in his games, depending on when the Blue Jays might see them during the regular season. So, he certainly comes as advertised as somebody who is able to dissect and think about this game at an extremely high level.
Yeah, they don't call him Chill Max. He is Mad Max, and you can see why. I mean, this is someone who is very intense.
Yes, absolutely. I think that as far as how this roster is shaping up, and we every year annually make too big a deal out of like who's on the opening day roster and out of, you know, camp battles and things. Like the thing is, if there's a lot of uncertainty as to what your front, your 26 man is going to look like on opening day, you're probably not a very good baseball team. That is the reality. Good teams have legitimate established players in spots around the diamond and on their roster who there is no question they're going to be with the team when opening day comes. So I think the Blue Jays are one of those teams. If I look at like competitions right now, I think Tyler Heineman's the backup catcher. Barring something crazy happening, I think he's there. I think that the rotation's obviously set. In the bullpen, you go Hoffman, Garcia, Green, Sandlin, Rodriguez, Little, and then the only person I have a question about is Eric Swanson, because we just haven't seen him in a game yet, and he was dealing with that forearm issue earlier in camp. So going to need to see him in a game before I'm like moving him from pencil to pen. Like if he is healthy and available, he's obviously in the bullpen on opening day, but we cannot close off the possibility that he starts on the IL, which would open a spot in the bullpen. I think that Ryan Yarbrough is absolutely in the bullpen, provided that he is healthy and effective, which he has been to this point. So it really is just like that one spot in the bullpen if Eric Swanson is unavailable, at which case you look to like the out-of-options guys and Zach Pop, Ryan Burr, and Tommy Nance could create an opportunity for one of those players. Otherwise, you're looking at trades or DFAs at the end of camp for those three because they do not have options. And I don't think that the optionable relievers, Nick Robertson, Josh Walker, and Easton Lucas are going anywhere. The Blue Jays also have an ability to open some 40-man roster spots at the end of camp by moving Alek Manoah and Angel Bastardo onto the 60-day IL. So that could create some room for somebody who's off roster right now, like a Miles Straw or an Alan Rodon, to move on roster. Could create some room to pick somebody off waivers or somebody who's been DFA'd or for a trade at the end of spring. So there is a bit of maneuverability there, but I guess my point here is there's really just like that uncertainty in the Swanson spot in the bullpen, and then I think on your big league bench, it's just like which outfielders are you going to take for a couple of outfield spots between like a Loperfido, a Straw, Baroa, Lucas, Class A, and Rodon. That's really the only uncertainty for me with what this roster is going to look like at opening day.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair analysis of the roster as a whole. I think Nathan Lucas is a really good shot to make this team in a bench capacity. Dalton Varsho looks pretty good.
2-2 to Varsho. And he hits it high in the air to right field. Rincones going back, running out of room. And he's done it again. Another first inning home run for Dalton Varsho. And the Blue Jays take an early lead.
Obviously, throwing is the real question here for him, but he certainly seems to be hitting the ball well and seeing the ball well with no shoulder issues at the plate. We'll see how his throwing progresses in the next 2-3 weeks here leading up to opening day, but he's got a chance to be on that roster from the jump, maybe playing some center field. Maybe it would be a little bit of DH. You know, we could see how that works. Either way, someone like Nathan Lucas, who can play a little center field, is kind of a logical complement to that. He's already on the 40-man roster. Jonathan Class A probably needs to go to AAA and get some reps. Loperfido, though, yep, he's got a shot to, you know, be on this team. And I wonder what they do with the right-handed bat situation, because I really think that there's room on this team for some sort of a right-handed hitter to complement all of these left-handers that they have, such as Varsho, such as, you know, a Lucas, of course, Addison Barger potentially. And is that Aurelvis Martinez? Is that David Schneider? I'm not sure exactly which way the Blue Jays end up going with that. I certainly, if Aurelvis is the guy that you think is the best option, I would 100% take Aurelvis Martinez. However, if David Schneider is the guy that you think is the best option, then just to me, it would just be a merit-based competition. Nothing to do with development or roster spots or anything like that.
To me, as it stands right now, it is Davis Schneider and Aurelvis Martinez starts the year at AAA. Like, things could change. I agree with you. Those two are basically in direct competition for one spot. But I've got Davis Schneider in there pretty firmly just because a lot of the adjustments that he made over the offseason seem to have taken. You know, looking back at video last year, Davis and David Popkins, the new Blue Jays hitting coach, like, just noticed that he was opening up a little bit too early in his swing, especially on fastballs. His upper and lower half weren't really in sync. He felt like his load just sort of felt disconnected from his swing. So he spent the offseason and the spring addressing some of those issues and really addressing the issues that he had against pitches away from him. And I see a situation like in Thursday's game where he gets a pitch middle away and he hammers it over the wall for a homer.
Now Schneider powers the ball to right center field, and the Blue Jays have gone back to back. First home run of the spring for Davis Schneider.
That's a pitch that last year either he like fouls off or he swings through or he takes for a strike. Like, that's a pitch that he can do damage on, and you're seeing him doing damage on it here in spring thanks to some of the tweaks that he's made. And I also think that, like, mentally Davis is just in a much better spot right now. Like, he's, you know, talking to him, he's talked about just feeling pretty hopeless during his slump last year and just how that weighed on him and how it felt like every time he was at the plate, the pitcher could just locate everything perfectly, you know, knew exactly like what he was looking for and was able to throw exactly something else. It had to be a difficult, dispirited feeling at that time. So I think that just like the place that Davis is in right now, physically and mentally, to me, puts him on the Blue Jays bench as that like right-handed power bat with who can obviously play at a corner outfield, a third base, or DH. Like, if I'm looking at the position player roster right now, I'm putting Will Wagner in as the DH just as a placeholder. I think that probably Anthony Santander is going to eat up like half the DH at bats this year, and then George Springer is going to have like 10%. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to have 10%. The rest is going to be rotation. But for the purposes of this exercise, I'll put Will Wagner at DH, Kirk at catcher, Vlad at first, Menez at second, Ernie Clement at third, Bo Bichette at short. I'll put Santander in left and George Springer in right. I think all those players are locks. And then you have that opening in center. If Varsho isn't ready to go, which like I do have questions as to whether he'll be ready to go. You know, I think that the recovery from this surgery in terms of throwing is pretty challenging. You know, it's been described to me as him relearning how to throw. And there's been this whole process that he's gone through where he like started with a football and then like slowly made his way to throwing baseballs and like worked up to 90 feet and has to like at each step of the way, 90 feet, 120, 150, has to reach like peak throwing intensity at each distance to make sure that everything is synced up and that the movement patterns are right, spinning the ball correctly and finishing with intent. Like these, you know, like it really is a very involved process and everyone is expecting that it's, you know, there could be setbacks here and there. So I'm not really anticipating the Varsho will be ready to go to play center field on opening day. I bet you he starts on the IL. So say that creates room for like a Joey Loperfido in center. And then for your bench, you got Heineman, Leo Jimenez, David Schneider, and then one more spot for an outfielder. As you said, that could be Nathan Lucas, could be Miles Straw, could be Stuart Baroa. And then on the outside of that discussion looking in, Jonathan Class A and Alan Rodon.
And you don't actually have to take Leo Jimenez because you can use Andrés Giménez or Ernie Clement as your backup shortstop. So if you wanted to, you could take an Addison Barger. You could take both Nathan Lucas and Joey Loperfido. They actually have a fair amount of flexibility, and this is part of if you don't have that locked in DH, which, you know, if they had signed someone like a Pete Alonso, then you have a locked in DH. Not the case with this roster configuration. So they actually have tons of options. They could basically go with any number of position players based on whoever they think can give them the most. I'm thinking it's offense for the most part they would be looking for with those bench bats. Of course, you need a center fielder. So to some extent, it's a defensive preference for one of them. And obviously, Heineman's there for all defense because he's not going to give you much offensively. But with the other two bench spots, you can prioritize offense and basically who's going to give you the best bat off the bench.
Absolutely. For me right now, Leo Jimenez is on the roster, but you know that can change. But that's kind of what I've been led to believe at this time. So, I think that Aurelvis Martinez is almost certainly starting the year at AAA. He'd have to like be just an absolute threat at the plate the rest of the way. I think he'd have to like really show that every time that he's up, there is like a plan, an approach, an understanding being demonstrated. That, you know, the pregame prep and the scouting report and all the information has been consumed and that he's really executing at a big league level there and not just sort of waiting for a mistake that he can hammer, and that he is, you know, understands how pitchers are trying to get him out and is laying off of spin from right-handers away from him, which, like, look, that's always going to be an issue for him just considering his approach, but he can't have, like, an over 40% chase rate against right-handed spin like he did at AAA last year. So, you know, if he forces that, then you do actually have some questions defensively on the infield because he is, you know, it's not exactly sterling defense for him at third base, which is where he would be playing. So that could move things with the roster around a little bit. But I think that the most likely situation here is that Aurelvis Martinez starts his year AAA.
They should have a pretty good AAA position player roster. Pitching side, a lot of questions. Jake Bloss, he's a prospect. He is very much a prospect when you look at 95, 96, but he's getting hit hard and he's not locating enough. And John Schneider was pretty direct when, you know, we were asking him the other day about Jake Bloss. I think you asked the question about why he's not getting the results that you might expect for a fastball that, you know, metrically and velocity-wise looks pretty good. But Schneider just saying, like, look, this guy is not putting the ball over the plate often enough. And so that is not a pitcher who is ready to contribute in the major leagues right now. Could have changed in 6 weeks. Maybe. Prospects can evolve in one direction or the other pretty quickly. But at this point, Jake Bloss does not look like a major league pitcher to me. He does not look like someone that you can depend on. You know, on the position player side, I see a pretty good position player depth and talent there that should help the Blue Jays as the season progresses.
You add in the fact that Adam Acko had surgery and Adam Klofenstein came in with an injury. You're looking at, you know, Jake Bloss, Andrew Bash. You're looking at Lazaro Estrada, Ryan Jennings. Could be room for the Blue Jays to add like a pitcher at the end of camp if one ends up on waivers or if somebody ends up DFA'd. Like, wouldn't be surprised at all if the Blue Jays are out there looking to pick up just like a veteran starter who can be a stopgap for them at AAA. Because remember last year we were talking about, oh, you know, the Blue Jays are well positioned at AAA because they've got, you know, Mitch White and Wes Parsons down there, and those two guys didn't even last to the end of April. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going to need starting depth, just considering some of the, you know, injuries that they've seen to that depth so far. I think they're going to be looking to build that out a little bit at the end of camp. But yeah, I agree with you around the position player side at AAA. When you look at like first base, you got Rainer Nunez and Riley Tirada. You know, at second base, you got like Michael Stefanik is like the one sort of veteran journeyman guy that they have at AAA on the position player side. So you got him at second base, at shortstop. You know, you've got Josh Kasevich. And I mean, if Leo Jimenez is in the big leagues or not, he could factor in there as well. At third base, you got Aroldis Martinez, Addison Barger, Damiano Palmigiani, like some pretty good options there. And then the outfield, got that collection of like Lucas Clase, Baroa, Roden, RJ Schreck ought to be there, Will Robertson. Like, it is going to be a young position player group at AAA, which is really what you want.
Exactly. So that's a strong base. And then pitching wise, that's the weak spot for this team right now.
Yes. And we will get to that and so much more when we talk to you next as we continue our coverage of spring training down here in Dunedin. But as for right now, Ben and I have to get off to the Blue Jays complex. And then at least one of us has to get off to Tampa for a night game tonight. The old spring training night game under the lights ahead of a Saturday split squad day game and a Sunday long-ass road trip to Port Charlotte. Always appreciated from those spring training schedule makers.
That's right. It's been interesting. A couple of spring doubleheader last week, I mean, it feels like so much longer than a week ago. But covering two games in one day, rainouts, there's always something to sort of keep things interesting here. But yeah, lots to discuss, and we'll be back with more as spring progresses.
Looking forward to it. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to Sho Ali for his work using this one. You listen to him all year long on Blue Jays Talk, and you follow him on Twitter at SNSALLI, at SNSALLI. Thanks to him for his work, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on At The Letters.